Hello, hello, and welcome back to Asking for Myself, the podcast where I ask all the questions you're too afraid to. I'm your host, Mia, the founder of Taboo, your go-to guide for all the things you didn't learn in sex ed, including how to talk to each other. Today's episode answers the age-old question we all need to be asking ourselves. Am I the drama? It's easy enough to blame our partners and hate on our exes for all of their quote-unquote toxic traits. But what about our own yellow, orange, and bright red flags? Today, I am joined by sex therapist and women's health expert, Dr. Carly Blau, and relationship expert, therapist, and coach, Dr. Elizabeth Frederick. Whether you're dating, in a relationship, or thriving in your single era, this is an episode you won't want to miss. Without further ado, let's talk taboo. Okay, so hello. Thank you both so much for joining me today for this episode. I'm really excited to talk about all things, I guess it's not super like positive topic, but all things, you know, toxic relationships and, you know, unhealthy dynamics within a relationship context and how that can also play a role in dating and finding those relationships. So really excited to chat with both of you. Just to start us off, can you each introduce yourself? And Liz, do you want to start?
Sure. Yeah. So I am a licensed professional counselor in Gilbert, Arizona. I own a practice here in Gilbert and in Phoenix. I specialize in relationships and attachment and trauma. And so that is a lot of the work that I do, whether people come to me individually as couples, family, parent-child dynamics, but that is really attachment theory and the way that trauma influences our relationships is my specialty and my passion for sure.
Wow. What an honor to be alongside both of you. I'm Carly. I am the other person who's going to be on this amazing podcast episode. I'm really excited. I was just too excited to not say how cool your practice is, Liz. Yeah, that's awesome. I am Carly Blau. I am a sex and relationship therapist. I'm the head and clinical director and founder of Boutique Psychotherapy, a new group concierge psychotherapy practice in New York. We're working on licensure in 14 different states, which is amazing. We specialize in sex relationships and dating. I am a clinical sex therapist with a master's in sex education and a clinical degree, PhD in clinical sex therapy that I'll be Dr. Blau next fall. Well, in 2 months from now. So we're not going to call me Dr. Blau yet, but soon. And I specialize in women's health. Specifically, my research is in infertility and the fertility women's health biomedical background and how that explores and shows up in relationships. And also, I do a lot of female and male empowerment, getting people to get into their psyche and learn how to feel really empowered in their relationships.
I love that. Thank you both so much for sharing your background. And I definitely think empowerment is going to be a theme of this episode to help people feel more empowered in their dating and relationships. So I guess just to tee us off and based on your background, Liz, can you talk about if there are any predictors for ending up in an unhealthy relationship, such as childhood trauma or certain attachment wounds, or if anyone can end up in an unhealthy relationship, I guess, and or.
Sure. And great question. And absolutely, let's just normalize that. Yes, anyone can certainly end up in a toxic or dysfunctional relationship. However, that risk is certainly compounded. It's not just about having trauma in your background, but it's about having unprocessed trauma. And that's a really important distinction because we all have trauma to some extent that nobody gets through life without some type of trauma. But the amount of trauma that you've had and whether it has been processed and you've worked through it, you've become aware of how it influences your relationships, your attachment style, and how you show up in relationships. With that understanding and that awareness, even if you've had a ton of trauma, you can still acquire, maintain healthy relationships. But really, it's that unprocessed piece and that lack of self-awareness. And so to answer your question, I mean, really, yes, the trauma compounds someone's likelihood to end up in a dysfunctional relationship. And I'm sure we'll get into this as we go, but a lot of that has to do with the programming that is created, the way we view relationships, what we expect out of relationships are influenced by that childhood trauma.
Yeah, no, thank you for sharing that. And I think the processing of it is a huge element and kind of also hopefully a nudge toward people to work through that trauma and so that they can start to experience, you know, healthier relationships. I guess kind of to what you just mentioned, is there any pattern with people who end up in a dysfunctional relationship where they then find themselves in like in their next relationship being a dysfunctional relationship? Like, does it become a pattern once you've been in one where now that's what you've come to expect or know of a relationship? And how does that play a role in kind of like future relationships, I guess?
I can speak to that really quickly. I think to your point, I think, you know, I tell all my clients, we're all damaged in a good way, right? The damage is what makes us worn. It's what makes us have grit and resilience and what allows us to have experience in the world and to be able to learn to grow through things. I think that to answer that, it's whether we choose to recreate our trauma or our experience, even if we don't want to define it as trauma, right? What we've been through, our parents, who raised us, what they've been through, how it came through in our world, right? That's what therapy is. That's what the process is. It's understanding that, the narrative, how it impacts you in your world. What are you recreating that is not healthy or transformative or empowering? And how are you recreating that now in your subsequent relationships? So to answer your question, right, it's learning how to stop old behaviors. First, you get aware of them, become aware, then learn the tools to stop them, and then recognizing your likelihood to fall back into those behaviors because they're what's comfortable, right? The devil we know is better than the devil we don't know. And that includes being in a toxic relationship, right? Dating a certain kind of person, it's familiar. It doesn't mean it's good. And in order for you to get out, you have to learn that you're comfortable in the chaos, but there's a way out of that. And it might be uncomfortable, but it's doable.
Yes. And I completely agree. And I think that in terms of that repeated pattern, just like Carly's saying, this is rooted in our earliest life experiences. And so that programming that takes place really early on is going to set the stage for what we come to expect out of relationships. And so to say, is the pattern because we were in one dysfunctional relationship and so now we're in multiple? Yes, except that one dysfunctional relationship was the relationship with our primary caregivers. And so that relationship early on with them, how they treated us, how they showed up for us or didn't show up for us, really, we start to believe that that is normal, that is acceptable, that's okay. And that's also what we're attracted to, just as Carly's speaking to. I call it the uncomfortable comfort zone. It's what we seek out because it's familiar. And so it's not about necessarily that first dysfunctional romantic relationship. It's about the original relationship that then takes place and the pattern persists throughout adulthood until we gain awareness around this is happening. This is how it makes me feel. This is how it's impacting my mental health. And I'm now going to choose it's not working for me anymore. And then absolutely we can break the pattern at any time, but it's really hard work.
And to your point, right? Like, the primary caregiver, what they do, how they show love, how they show affection to the people that they have intimate relationships with and also to you. So for example, watching how your primary caregiver treated their romantic relationships, that sets the tone and and really writes the script for you on how you're going to look to either do it like that or maybe even in the complete opposite way. But it's still this gray area. It's the middle ground. It's finding what way works in a relational concept that allows you to have a healthy relationship. And so often we forget that. Like, if the primary caregiver, you know, it's like, what are you doing? Why are you doing that? Like, finish your homework. You know, like, you need to be home. Talking like that all of a sudden becomes love because the primary caregiver is who we socially and from a social behavioral perspective register as loving us because it's dependable. So if it's dependable and it's reliable, and then we deem that to be safe, even when it's not. So like there's so many factors to this.
Yeah, no, I think both of you, I love what you're talking about. And I think it's so important that people start to kind of unpack that and where this all originated from to begin with. And one, I kind of want to talk about like how to go about addressing that, identifying that you even maybe need to address this and getting, you know, working with a therapist. One, what does that look like? And two, for people who maybe don't have access to therapy or who aren't ready, what can they do to kind of start to address some of these things in their lives?
And that self-awareness piece is where we have to start. And so having awareness around how are you feeling in your relationships? How does your body feel? I start with the physiological cues with my clients of, does that dynamic make your stomach hurt? Does it make your chest feel tight? Like, how does your body feel when you're thinking about being around that person, when you're actually with them, and then afterwards? And starting to really tune into that. You know, when people usually seek out therapy or they decide like, hey, I kind of need a change. I just am not sure what, where, or why. That self-awareness can be a really good place to start of just observing how your body feels throughout the day, how you feel in interaction with other people, and tuning into when you feel your best. When you can start to track some of those patterns, we can often see that toxic relationship is not when we feel our best, right? And so gaining awareness around that is going to be crucial. And then starting to learn where are those behaviors coming from? Why do I believe this is normal or acceptable? And then figuring out how to do differently. And for people who can't afford therapy, which is incredibly common, there are so many YouTube videos, there are so many podcasts, there are so many books. Now, if somebody has the option to go to therapy, I'm going to just be transparent and say it's not the same. Like, therapy is a whole different ballgame when it comes to healing that the trauma and the attachment wounds. But if you are unable to access therapy, that is not an excuse to not do the work. There are still plenty of ways that you can start to dig into self-awareness, figure out what's going on, and figure out how to do differently.
Yeah, that's really beautifully said. I think the other thing is like, I was just telling somebody about this today, like TikTok and YouTube and so many of these social media outlets have become, and even podcasts, have become something that people use in lieu of therapy, right? Like, they don't wanna, they'll spend their money on a lot of other things, whatever money they have, but self-care and therapy isn't something that they wanna spend money on or that they can't or they don't have the privilege to, right? And in that same vein, you have to be really careful of what you're listening to. It's not all or nothing. And what and who you are listening to is very influential. And to understand that you need to just take pieces and let it influence you and let it, peak, like let it inspire a curiosity in the self, right? Instead of letting it be what guides you, because you can't do therapy. That's why we all went through licensure. That's why we went through hours and hours of rigorous training to be able to guide people to do that, because you can't do it by yourself. If you could, none of us would have jobs, right? So that's one. And then there's two things that are interesting to talk about. One is, you know, if you don't have access to therapy, recognizing that when you want to point the finger at everybody else in your life as everyone else is the problem, or even the person you're in the toxic relationship with, right? Like, I hear it all the time. I was married to a narcissist. I was married to this. I'm married to someone with this. It's like the finger is always pointed at somebody else. And I tell people, when you point the finger at one person, you have three fingers pointing back at the self. Point the finger at you. How are you able to control who you're in a relationship with? How are you choosing to stay? Why are you choosing to stay? What are you getting out of it? What is being fulfilled by staying in it? Look within the self, because at the end of the day, that's what you have the the opportunity and the access to control. You can never, even in a healthy relationship, control the other person. And so it's really acknowledging what you can control. And also, right, talking about like biomedical stuff, right? Dopamine. You know, being in a toxic relationship, you're all listening to this, so it's a little hard, but you know, I draw a diagram for people. It kind of looks like watching a heart monitor on ER. How old am I? And or Grey's Anatomy, but like you're watching, it feels really yucky for a while, right? And that, and your dopamine kind of is at one level. And then when you get this positive type of connection and you get this attention and you get this love, even if it's like we said with the primary caregiver yelling at you, but it feels like attention, it makes the dopamine in your brain spike so high that it actually makes you feel good, even though it doesn't feel good.
but it makes your brain feel like it felt good in that moment. And so it craves it again. So you're willing to stick out these toxic relationships and these long periods of, you know, toxicity, because you're hoping for these good feelings to come, even though they're not really good feelings. So understanding that these things like all play a role and inform toxic relationships make you stop and think, like Liz, like what you said, it like makes you stop and think about what you're choosing to be a part of.
Yeah, that all I can think of when you were just saying that, and thank both of you so much for those responses, is I can think of like previous relationships where I would do something like that, where like you almost provoke an argument just because having some type of like reaction feels like, oh, you care. Like, I don't feel like you care. So now unless you like get into this argument, like that's how I feel like you care, which is obviously not healthy. But I can definitely like identify and relate with that. So I guess that being said, and kind of touching on what you both mentioned earlier with like this discomfort or like finding comfort in the negative sort of patterns, because it's what we know, I guess like number one, how do you start? Actually, let me go backwards. So getting comfortable with that, like how do you sit in that discomfort when you start dating somebody, right? Like let's say you're used to being in a certain type of dynamic that isn't working for you, and now you find yourself in like a stable situation and it feels more like this person is, you know, respectful and there's just more security there. How, for some people, if they're not used to that, or like Carly, you're talking about like the spikes in dopamine, if you're in that, how do you get comfortable with something that is uncomfortable for you? And like, how do you even identify that it's something you want when you're not used to it? So it may feel like, I don't like this.
Yeah, sure. I think, you know, the first step to it is really, it's sitting in the discomfort and recognizing that maybe you want to pick a fight. Maybe you're sitting there and internalizing with intrusive, you know, ruminating thoughts of what's wrong? Why don't they like me? Why didn't they text me back? Why didn't they answer? Right? Like, why did they say like, no problem, honey? Right? It's like, what do you mean no problem, honey? Why did you say it like that? What do you mean? Why did I say it like that? Why did you say no problem, honey? It's like, I didn't say any, I meant no problem. Like, it's recognizing that sometimes you're sit and then catching yourself and having, and this is really bravery. This is really bravery I'm talking about. It's really having the bravery to say, you know what? I'm sorry. I am expecting you to be giving me an attitude right now and you're not. And I am reacting as if you did. And like catching that, I do it with my couples all the time. It's like the benefit of the doubt. And recognizing that you have a desire for the drama. You have a desire for the toxicity, right? Like anything is good in moderation. We're going to fight in every healthy relationship you're ever going to be in. You're going to fight. There's going to be conflict. You're going to say not nice things. You're going to do not nice things. But it has to be in moderation. I think that that's like a shift to this conversation. But it's like, what makes it toxic is when there's no balance between what's good and healthy and fulfilling and reciprocal and kind and loving and affectionate and what's tumultuous and belittling and degrading and frustrating and anger producing. And right, like you, nothing in this world, we've gotten to a world where it's quite polarized in many, many, many ways. We won't go down that whole road, but like everyone on this call, I think, and who's listening can look at the atmosphere in the world that we live in right now. And there's a lot of this or that or all or nothing, right? And it's not, everything can exist in moderation. It just can't be all toxic, right? It can't be like, I love you, but I'm sorry that I, you know, scream at you all the time. That's just how I have learned to show love. No, learn better. Learn different in order to be with me. That's not going to work all the time. I can see it happening sometimes. I can understand that that's how your mom spoke to you, right? Just using an example. But that can't be the reason why I tolerate that, right? So like finding these middle grounds so that you're back in this, what I call the gray, this gray space where it's not all or nothing, where we're learning to be human. but not tolerating too much.
Yeah, and I completely agree. I talk about the gray frequently as well. And I think, I mean, that's such a profound question because you're correct that it can be really hard to tell if we're used to something that's familiar and that's what we seek out and that's what we're attracted to. First of all, it can be really hard. We second guess ourselves a lot when we're then introduced to a different dynamic and we wonder, okay, is this how it's supposed to feel? Or am I have my clients tell me all the time, I just feel like I can't trust myself anymore because I keep ending up in these same dynamics. And I completely relate to that. And when I suggest that they go back to the observation of the body to be really aware of the nervous system, because in a safe dynamic, the nervous system feels safe. The nervous system doesn't have a reason to be reactive. And so when we check in with that in these new dynamics, okay, so this feels weird because it's not what I'm used to, but also it feels safe and really holding space for that and. This feels different and it feels good. But that discomfort piece that you're describing, which is so incredibly common of, okay, so this is not familiar. What am I going to do with it? I talk a lot about how humans are designed for adaptation. I mean, we are incredible beings and we adapt. We either adapt to the good or we adapt to the bad, but we adapt to it all. And so you can get used to these healthy relationships. You can become comfortable and that can become your norm. But you have to be willing to stop and recognize, have awareness around, this is making me feel uncomfortable because it's different, not because it's bad. And so I'm willing to sit in it. I'm willing to adapt to it and really just see kind of where it goes from here. And so that adaptation piece is huge. And I really, you know, when I'm walking clients through this, when they are being exposed to new relationships that are outside of their norm, we talk about, you know, is there anything inherently wrong going on? Or is it just that it's different, that it's abnormal, it's out of what you know to be true? And if there's not something inherently wrong, inherently disrespectful, then okay, let's sit in it and see where it goes. But the other half of that, of even deciding who is worth sitting in that relationship, is I have my clients identify, I call it their needs, wants, and boundaries. So they identify five needs, five wants, and five boundaries. And obviously, there's going to be other things we look for in our partners besides these main things. But the starting with the needs, these are non-negotiables. Okay, so this is has to be respectful or consistent, has to have a job, whatever that is, that it's this is a non-negotiable. The five wants, these are the preferences. So 6'2", or a certain race, a certain ethnicity, has a certain paying job, whatever that is, the wants are, this would be nice to have, but it's not necessarily a deal breaker. And then the five boundaries, these are the deal breakers. And so if there's something that they do, maybe they work 80 hours a week. Okay, no, I can't do that. I like attention. I like to cuddle at night. That's not going to work for me. So that would be a deal breaker. And when we can identify these are our needs, these are our wants, these are our boundaries, when we're sitting in that new relationship that feels uncomfortable, not necessarily because it's toxic or dysfunctional, but because it's meeting these needs, we can stop and look at this checklist and say, okay, no, I mean, literally, they're checking these things off. Okay, it probably just feels uncomfortable because it's different.
Yeah, I absolutely love everything you just said. And I think to kind of piggyback on that, I'd love to ask about, and maybe it's the boundaries piece, or I wonder what piece of it that is, which is like identifying red flags, right? Like, are there definitive red flags in a person where you can say, because I think some of us may use red flags as like, he didn't, you know, pay the bill or something. I don't know. Like, obviously that's completely fine. But like, let's say someone might say like, oh, that's a red flag. It's like, is that a red flag? Or is that just a preference that you would have in someone that you're dating for whatever reasons? And versus a red flag of maybe a behavior that's actually like indicating that they may not be someone to be in a healthy partnership with. So what would you define as a red flag? And then I guess what can people look out for when dating in terms of like early indicators that this may not be? And also, I guess with that, is it individual to the person? Is it like a red flag for you may be different than a red flag for me? Or are there just like hard kind of red flags?
It's funny. Like, there are a couple of Facebook groups. There's one of, like, are we dating the same guy in New York? And everyone talks about, like, red flag, red flag, red flag, red flag, right? Like, these are all red flags. But, like, what is a red flag, right? Like, a red flag is so personalized to each person of what you can't tolerate. Each person has different wants, needs, desires, and boundaries, right? For me, I think the red flag conversation is four things. First and foremost, safety. Okay. This is what I'm going to define as what are universal, this cool article. What are universal red flags? Okay. Universal red flags are four things. One, safety. If your safety is being compromised physically, emotionally, and it's not a red flag. It's a reason to walk out. It's a reason to say, hey, I need help. I'm scared. I need help to get out of this. I need help to walk away, to use your resources, lifelines, right? To just say, like, I am not safe. I do not feel safe. And I need someone to help me so that I can find safety. Even if safety is a foreign concept to you, right? Because you're used to being in an unsafe environment. Recognizing that your safety is you are your most important person in the world. And so if your person is not safe, that's a reason to leave. Okay. That's beyond a red flag. That's out. Then the three red flags, okay, are accountability, ownership, and awareness. If you are dating somebody in which you are expressing, like Liz, you said, your needs, your wants, your boundaries, and somebody is not able to be aware of that, and they're not showing awareness on a consistent basis, that they're not holding you in mind, okay? And they're not taking ownership of where they're responsible for some of the problems in the relationship and the things that are maybe perhaps needing to be worked on, but you're always the problem and they won't take accountability. They're not aware of their own space in the room and in the relationship. And also there's no ownership of how they are also responsible for what is going on in the relationship. Those are things you want to think about in my mind as red flags, right? Because that's universal. That's like, hey, I'm Carly. I have a history of X, Y, and Z. These things are really sensitive to me. I'd really appreciate it if you could change the way you're talking to me. And it's like, but you talk to me like this. But the only reason I talk to you like that is because of this and always putting it back on you. That to me is a red flag, right? Because like, instead of like, wow, yeah, thanks so much for talking to me about that. I didn't realize that that's something that impacts you so much. I'll be aware of that. And I can take ownership of the fact that maybe I did speak to you that way. And I'm so sorry. I'm going to be accountable and hold myself to making sure that I don't continue to talk to you that way. And I appreciate you being brave enough to have that conversation with me. That's the kind of relationship you're looking for, right? You're going to make mistakes. You're going to do things that are toxic. It's how do you remain safe, aware, take ownership, and be accountable to yourself.
I 1000% agree. I love that. And that is also what I would identify as, yes, very universal in terms of that awareness is so important. If that individual you're dating can't see their role in your dynamic, they can't see how they are contributing to whether it's an argument or disconnect, that to me is, yes, a big red flag. And then the accountability piece. So being able to take ownership. But then furthermore, the ability to then behavior change. So they recognize this is an issue, this is hurting you, I'm willing to do it differently in the future. And if they're not willing to do it differently, then that is a red flag. I do believe that a majority of red flags beyond those that Carly just discussed are very individual and they are unique. And that's okay. I want to empower that if there's something that bothers you because it triggers you or it doesn't meet your need, it's not compatible with who you are, it doesn't align with your values, your ethics, your morals, then that's a red flag. That means that relationship isn't going to work for you. And that doesn't mean that that other person is dysfunctional or toxic or that there's something wrong with that other person. It means that they're not compatible with you. And so it's crucial to become aware of when we go on these original, you know, the first dates and we start texting somebody or start engaging, we have to be aware of, as Carly is saying, some of these safety behaviors, some of these narcissistic tendencies. That's not the same as calling someone a narcissist. It's the tendencies. And then on top of that, we have to also be aware of what we want out of the relationship. And so going back to the needs, wants, and boundaries, once you identify that, anything outside of the needs and boundaries, the ones we can have a little wiggle room on, but anything with outside of the needs and the boundaries, that's a red flag for you. And so there is no point in entertaining that relationship, even if they are the best person ever, they have the best job, they're the most attractive, they're the kindest, all of those things. If there's something that doesn't align with what you're looking for, that's a red flag. And so do yourself a favor and out of respect for them, mm-hmm. move on.
Or if it's the best sex of your life, right? Like that happens all the time, right? It's like you're willing to tolerate
right?
so much toxicity because nobody goes down on you better. It's like, you know, we've all been there, but like, you know, it's just, it's really a matter of, I like this whole like universal red flags things, but and being accountable and how each red flag can also be individualized and how, you know, you don't yuck somebody else's yum and what works for you may not work for someone else. And for those of you who believe in ethical non-monogamy, right, this is another conversation. But for those of you, which many people are still looking for a quote unquote soulmate or a monogamous partner or someone that they can be committed to in a one-to-one relationship or maybe even in a polyamorous relationship, right? Like you want to be able to express what you need and what you crave and what you feel and have the other person hear you, respect it, and like be able to give you what you're looking for. And if they can't, right, like then that's a red flag. Not a red flag like one of the universal ones we're talking about before, that it's like a safety thing or that they're not respectful of you. It's that sometimes we can really like somebody or really like having sex with somebody or really like kissing someone who just isn't capable based on who they are, where they've been through, what they've been through, where they've been, that they don't have the skill set or the tools to be the person you really need them to be. And that's not to their fault, right? Some people don't have access. Some people aren't aware. Some people haven't done that searching yet. But like, you don't get what you want unless you express what you need. And it's not fair to claim a red flag when you're not willing to express what you need and how to work. And if someone's even willing to work on that with you or work through it with you. I think that's like a shift in this conversation, but I'm seeing a lot of that now in the dating world, as I wonder if you do too, from a clinical perspective where you are like, I find people are like, yep, red flag, not for you. And then on the Facebook group, it's like, don't talk to him. And all of a sudden people are getting reputations. Like all of a sudden you're literally claimed unlovable because you have red flags. You know how many red flags I have? I am literally a walking Mario Kart to most men. like with the flags above me, you know, it's like, but to my husband, I'm the love of his life and an amazing partner. It's just, it's in some capacities, it's relative. And we have to be really mindful. You have to express what you need and what you want so you can be relational despite the flags.
But in the difference there though, Carly, is that you are aware of your red flags. And that's the beauty of it, right? And that is why your husband can love you in the way that he can, because you know those red flags exist and you're working on them and you do your best and you're accountable.
I'm accountable, right? I'm accountable. I'm aware. I'm accountable. I take ownership of them. I understand how they impact him and how his impact me. And I hold on to my reactions so that I'm giving safe space and safety emotionally, right? To the, like, to your point, it's just what you, it's how you take accountability for your own red flags, right? Like I think so many people don't even look at themselves.
You didn't think you could go that long into an episode without hearing about my best friend Uberlube, did you? Uberlube is that girl, and soon she'll be your bestie too. Uberlube is queen bee of the sexual wellness product playground. Trust me, she'll keep things slipping and sliding. She'll have your back whether you're playing alone, with a partner, or even in a group. And unlike the theme of today's episode, Uberlube is anything but toxic. Our girl is made with clean ingredients, fragrance-free, and enriched with vitamin E for a smooth finish. Just like this ad. Go grab a bottle or 10 of Uberlube using the code TABU, that's TABU, on uberlube.com. Go ahead and enjoy your sexual endeavors.
I have two follow-up questions to that. One, where do I begin? Okay, so number one, let's just talk about what you both just mentioned, which is like identifying within yourself your own red flags. So number one, like how do we start to identify where we may be, you know, causing some unhealthy dynamic, or where we're not, you know, maybe we're not even bringing up our needs, you know, maybe that's a red flag, someone who can't identify their needs or communicate their needs. I don't know. But how do we start to identify the areas in which we could improve? And then, you know, how do you be self-reflective about that, but not beat yourself up and like know you're working on it, and like even bring that up to a potential partner? Like, do you have to be all the way? I know the answer is no, I'm assuming, but like, yeah, it's like if you're not all the way healed or you haven't fully worked through these issues, like it doesn't mean you can't date. It doesn't mean you're not lovable. How do you, yeah, one, how do you start identifying that? And two, how can you have healthy relationships when you're still working on yourself?
And the big part is starting with asking yourself, what is my role in this? So when a conflict takes place, for you to take a step back and really assess, what did I contribute to that? What was within my circle of control that I could have done differently? You know, our red flags are not actually as mysterious as we want to pretend they are. It's just really easy to do that, to justify them, to make excuses, to claim ignorance. When in fact, most of us, we're well aware of what's going on. It's just if we're willing to identify it, if we're willing to talk openly about it, if we're willing to take ownership of it. But when we step back, we can say, okay, you know, the example Carly gave earlier, their response to us, and they didn't actually do anything wrong, and we jumped on them because we felt triggered. Okay, that was my role in it. I could have done that differently. I could have responded differently. And so starting to really even track, I really encourage my clients when they're going through the healing process to do a lot of tracking. What does conflict look like in your relationship? How was it started? How did you engage in it? You know, how did it escalate when it was going on? And so that they can dissect, okay, yep, this is where I came in. This is where I could have done differently. This is what was within my circle of control. That is a big part of awareness, is really getting a visualization, getting it on paper and seeing this is what happened and this is how I contributed to it. And that's a really important place to start. But then to your question about can we still have healthy relationships? Yes, because we are all dysfunctional and we are all traumatized and we all have insecurities. It's how much we're aware of that and how much we're willing to work on that and how much we're willing to use the pause when we want to be reactive and instead we stop a beat and we really assess, okay, this would be normally the way I would respond and I've been working so hard, so I'm going to choose differently. And when you're in, it's a little bit harder when you're dating, but when you're in a committed relationship and you're going through your healing process and you have a supportive partner, and I love doing this, whether with my couples clients or even having individuals, I often suggest that they make their partner aware of, hey, babe, this is what I'm working on. So I know the way that this hurts you. I know the way that this creates dysfunction in our dynamic. So I'm working on getting better at using I statements. So when you catch me, when you see me doing that, you know, and I encourage my clients, laugh about it, be silly, like who cares? It's all part of the process, and just allow yourself to practice, practice, practice. But when your partner is aware of it, they can see, oh, wow, you're really making an effort. And that's how you kind of ride that in between, that gray area of I'm not fully healed, but I'm on my way. That effort goes a really long way.
I love that. I love that. And it made me think, like I was thinking while you were speaking, right? You know, a therapist I used to work with, Edie Nathan, she specializes in grief, but she would talk to me about chosen blindness, right? So we're aware, right? When I have clients that come to me, I had no idea he was having an affair. Yeah, you did it. That's totally fine. But you knew something changed. You knew the shift happened. You knew that he wasn't as, or they weren't as present as they used to be. Something shifted. Right? But you chose to go blind to it because it was easier to go blind than it is to face the darkness, right? When you're not prepared to be in the dark by yourself. And that was really profound. And I wanted to share that. And then also, right, like what are the most common problems that exist in our lives, right? Sitting down and thinking, huh, what relationships have I been in? And what were the problems that existed in them? What kind of people have I dated? What kind of backgrounds did they come from, right? Like, every man I've ever loved had an addiction. What does that say about me? Not what does it say about them? What does it say about me? What do I need to work on? What did I need to recognize, right? I had a need to be needed. And what better than to be needed by someone who's addicted to something, right? It's like, I was like, not to make it personal, but that's an example. I don't mind disclosure when it's in the best interest of the client, right? And like, that's an example of, instead of looking and being like, oh, I have such a thing for people who are struggling with addiction. And, you know, he was this and he was that, and he did this and he couldn't get himself together. And he was, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's like, no, no, I had a thing for this. I was struggling with that within myself. I needed validation in ways that I got it from the, right? Like, rambling, but I think you get what I mean. It's just a matter of like really being aware of the problems that exist in our lives and the common things that exist in our lives and the themes and where we hold space, where that is in our control. What are we yearning for? And how do we get it otherwise? How do we get it elsewhere? Right? Like, and to the point about, you know, do you share your red flags with a partner? I tell this to people all the time. You don't need to share everything that you become aware of within yourself. In fact, sometimes sharing everything you become aware of in yourself in therapy or through journaling or through therapy notebooks can be actually kind of traumatizing for your partner. You know, we have to think that when we become aware of something within ourselves, we went through it. So it kind of can become a moment of enlightenment, right? Of like, oh God, I'm like this because of that. And it finally makes so much sense and this feels so much better. And I just want to tell the person that I like, because if they know why I'm like this, then it just explains it and it makes so much sense. But what if hearing that for them is traumatic for them to then think about that for you, right? Then they have to process that. So sometimes it's better to like just say, hey, I wanted to let you know I'm aware that I do this. And it's like the example also I give is, you know, instead of saying to your partner or to someone you're dating, hey, I'm so sorry that I said that. It's like, hey, and thinking that that's the end of the conversation, it turns into, hey, I just wanted to apologize for something that I did. I don't know if it impacted you, but I wanted to let you know that I'm aware of it. And then I'm thinking about it and I'm sitting in that action and I'm aware of what I did. And I didn't like that I spoke to you this way. Oh, don't worry about it. It didn't mean it. No, I understand and I appreciate that, but I wanted you to know it didn't feel good for me. So it's really just changing the narrative to take it and make it about you. And you're not to blame. This is not like, this isn't a blame game. This isn't like, oh, you're the problem. No, it's how do you have control and ownership and empowerment that like, hey, if you can recognize your role, what more empowering to recognize that you can be the reason you change?
Yeah. Well, a big part of, I love that in terms of the patterns and the themes and an activity I do with my clients, but I also encourage people, they can do this on their own. So going back to, if you can't afford to go to therapy, this is an activity you can do on your own. And it is creating a timeline of those, your early years. So you start at birth and you're identifying what you know about birth, who is living in the home, what were their roles, what was that dynamic like? And then you take that timeline. So if I'm doing in session with a client, I'm going to take it, you know, the birth to five and then the elementary years, then middle school. So I break it up a little bit. But as we're going through that timeline of the entire lifespan, we're going to, you know, get to their present age. We're identifying the themes that Carly is speaking of because we're identifying how often is abandonment coming up, is abuse coming up, rejection, chaos, you know, all of these different elements of that can be really profound into adulthood. And so when somebody can stop and really see that, okay, well, this makes sense why I continue to end up in a relationship with an addict because my home environment was so chaotic and that's what an addict brings, you know, that's what, then there can be, even there's a sense of empowerment in that because when I can see it and I can understand it, I can then choose differently. And for a lot of my clients, I've noticed that they might not be able to identify this theme of being in relationship with addicts, but they might identify it as being in a theme of being in relationship with bad boys, or they'll say something where they're almost glorifying it. And so then when we start to dissect it, it's like, okay, so what are the similarities here? Okay, lots of addiction going on, lots of chaos going on. And then when they go to head into their new relationship, if they're maybe in a single stage, then we stop to assess, okay, let's look at this person's traits. Let's look at their qualities. Let's look at what they're bringing to the table. And are there things that are similar, or are we ensuring that we're picking new behaviors? And so that timeline can give a lot of clarity and understanding.
Yeah, it's making me think about like the distinction as well between an explanation and an excuse for behavior. So like understanding where it comes from, but I guess it doesn't necessarily excuse the behavior. It just may provide some context and understanding for why it's happening. And I guess to speak to Carly, what you mentioned about sharing previous either trauma or, you know, patterns that you've identified, how would each of you recommend going about having those conversations? And like, I'm sure it's individual to the person to some extent, but what is the line between sharing your experiences and saying like, you know, I have had, or maybe you were previously in, you know, an unhealthy relationship, or you had, you know, certain traumatic experiences as a child or even in adulthood. How do you share those things without one, the person like then feeling the need to walk on eggshells and them needing to then process whatever it is you're telling them? But like, it does provide some context, I would imagine, right? So like, how helpful is it to share those things? Is it a necessary part of a relationship to share those things? Or when does it become like a fallback of, well, you know that I went through this, or you know that I was raised this way, you know, like what is that kind of that line?
I think it's choosing. So I have a little book here of things that I want my kids to know, right? Like about me and, or things I want them to know. And one of the things I said is like, one of my shortcomings is I think sometimes I'm too vulnerable up front, like awkwardly vulnerable up front. And what I've learned as a growing adult is like, give of yourself, but give slowly, right? It's a relational experience, like be vulnerable, but be vulnerable in a slow way. So if you've been through things, and we've all been through things, be mindful of when you share it. And for what purpose are you sharing? Are you sharing because you want them to have leeway when you do snap and you're like, well, my mom used to talk to me like that, so like that's why I do it. And so you want to give like an excuse, right? And like a rationalization for why you're not being nice because your parent was that way or your caregiver was that way. Or are you sharing because like you realized something? And it's kind of the same rule as like a therapist with disclosure. I disclose all the time, I think, again, when it's in the best interest of my client and when my disclosure isn't going to be something that they then have to carry on their shoulders in addition to whatever they're carrying, right? So like, why am I sharing it? What am I expecting it to do for the client? What are they going to get out of this? Is it going to help them? Or is it going to be something they're going to get off the phone with me and be like, God, now I feel weird. I didn't realize that, you know, it's like, that's not what you want to do. So it's choosing what to share, when to share it, and when, meaning like at what point in your partnership or your relationship, how deep are you? Is it reciprocal? Are you both explaining things and talking about things where you're getting that same level of vulnerability back? Okay. And also like why do you need to share it? What are you sharing for? What's your purpose? What do you want out of it? And if you can answer those questions where it's really to benefit your partner and the relationship, yes, go for it. But I would say there's probably another way for you to go about trying to get what you want without having to share something that could potentially be really heavy for the other person to have to hold on to, especially being someone that cares about you a lot.
Yeah, beautiful points. I agree with the checking in on what is the point of this? What is the value add here? So ensuring that there is a benefit to that conversation. I also really like what Carly is saying about being aware of the timeline of it. So, you know, the first date is not necessary to share all your trauma. And by the way, if either of you have dated as a therapist, everyone wants to share their trauma on the first date. So there's that. And that is really awkward and unnecessary and inappropriate. And so, you know, we don't need to share those type of things that early on. There does have to be a sense of trust, a foundation that is built prior to sharing all of that. However, where my perspective does differ a bit from Carly is that a big part of, in my opinion, emotional intimacy is sharing with each other what I call our raw parts. And our raw parts are what we hold sacred and what we don't share with the rest of the world and what we almost hand over as, I want you to know me to my deepest soul. And so that is why I'm sharing this with you. And if that is your why in some situations, if that's the value add, is that you really want them to understand your heart, then I do think that there is benefit to that. The other aspect of that, though, is how much detail are you providing? And I think that that's where it gets a little bit sticky, okay? So if there was some type of maybe abuse in childhood, we don't have to elaborate or get detailed on everything that happened, but we can share, when I was 7 years old, this event happened, this is how it made me feel, this is how I see it impacts me today. We can share on that high level and still create that emotional intimacy. And so I think it's being aware of how much you're sharing, but then also, I also loved what Carly said about the reciprocal nature of it. If you are the only one sharing, and if you are talking about your trauma every day, all day, okay, maybe add another day with your therapist a week or something, because that is not your partner's job, is not to be your therapist, and your partner's job is not to be your dumping ground. And so if that's what it starts to become, that is no longer added value. That just becomes, creates a discomfort that in and of itself can create toxicity.
I love that. And I wanted to just say two things. Like, one, I think one of the things that leads to toxicity is people think that a partner who's willing to be your dumping ground feels like you're loved. Like, oh, but they're there for me for everything and I can tell them anything. And that's happening at the beginning of your relationship, right? There's something to be said about being able to be raw and having raw parts, right? I love that. And I want to be clear, I think I do share a like mind with you, as like, there is a raw part where, like, you know, all the things that I've been through and what my partner has been through, like, we know each other's things, a lot of them. And those are the raw parts of our relationship that nobody else has the privilege of knowing. Right. But in that, to my point of the timeline, those things weren't shared with one another until there was reciprocal safety, reciprocal respect, relational connection. Like, I knew that he was as committed and safe and emotionally and intellectually with me as I was with him. And that's where the sharing of the raw parts occurred. So I think, like, that's really the piece for me, but also aligning with what you said, Liz, and also recognizing as a red flag, a universal red flag, that just because someone's willing to listen to everything all the time doesn't mean it's a foundation for a really healthy relationship. You're not each other's therapist. You are there to support each other through all what you go through and to guide them and to uplift each other. That doesn't mean you need to be the one who's processing it with them or for them.
Yeah, I think that's huge. And thank you both so much for elaborating on that. I'm wondering, with a partner, right? And like responding to you sharing certain experiences or, you know, parts of yourself, I guess, you know, this would be a more manipulative person who may like weaponize those things against you, but obviously that does happen and that's like a real thing. And so I think, and that's why some people probably are, you know, close to the chest with sharing things, because maybe they have had that experience. But not just that, but I guess, like, even Liz, I'm thinking about like attachment styles. How much do we, in the partner role, like, if you know someone's childhood trauma, if you know their attachment style, like, obviously those things are really helpful to give context and understand who your partner is, maybe where certain behaviors come from. But yeah, like, how much do you kind of lean on that to say, like, oh, well, I know that they're doing this because of X, Y, Z, you know, like, how helpful is it to have that context versus when it becomes sort of like, oh, I'm justifying everything they do because I know that they had this terrible experience, or I know that they had this upbringing. Because I know that I've done that either with a partner or friend, where I'm like, oh, but I feel bad because like they've been through this or they've done. And so I know where it's coming from. I know that maybe they're deeply insecure, but it doesn't mean it's okay. But I'm, you know what I mean? So I guess I'm just wondering, like, how helpful is it to have that context, and when can it be kind of used negatively?
Yes. And I do believe it is helpful for exactly what you're describing. But a phrase to keep in mind is there's a difference between empathy versus enabling. And when you can really start to break that down and you can understand the distinction, you can show up for your partner in a validating, empathetic way without enabling poor behavior. And so what that might look like is maybe they're feeling really triggered about something. We can validate that all day long. You know, you're feeling really overwhelmed, you're feeling really stressed out, whatever that emotion is. And I need you to talk to me in a different way as you're expressing that. And so really that boundary is there. Or I totally understand you had a stressful day at work and you got caught up with things. And I've asked you to let me know when you're going to be late because I worry about you. And so that is the distinction there, where we can tell them, we can validate all day long what's going on. And then we can also express a need at the same time. What starts to happen is they don't hold space for that. And they think it has to be one or the other. So either if I'm validating you, that means I'm condoning the behavior. Or if I'm holding you accountable, it means I'm being insensitive to your trauma. That's simply not the case. Both can exist. Just takes a lot of practice, but both can certainly exist.
I think that's the key, the practice, right? Like most of the things in life are so simple. If we just stop, take a deep breath and like acknowledge that, it's just the practice piece, right? It's like, how do you hold someone accountable? Be like, hey, you know, you're talking to me like this. I know that was what was normal in your house growing up, but it's not normal for me. Do you think we could do that differently? Right? Or like, my husband's a chef. And in the culinary world, if any of you are in it, you know that it's very militaristic, you know, in the kitchen. And I'll say to him like, hey, you know, it feels like you're barking an order. I know you're not. I know you don't mean to do it, but I'm feeling a little reactive because you're talking to me like that. And it just feels that way. Like, do you think maybe you could just try doing that a little differently? And it's the accountability of like, I'm having a hard time with it. I know that this is why you do it. I know you do it like this because it's what happens in the kitchen. I get that. I'm aware of it, right? And it's also kind of taking yourself out, depersonalizing it, for lack of better terms, where you take yourself out of the situation, like you're two like players in a movie, in like a game, or, you know, characters in a movie where you remove yourself and you're like, hey, I know you're doing this because you went through this and blah, 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 but like, it's making me feel this way. Do you think maybe you could try to do it a little differently, right? Or if you could say it to me like this. And then being tolerant that like, if you really like someone, and back to like the universal red flags, if you really like someone and they meet your needs, your wants, and your boundaries, and there's no safety red flags, but perhaps they need to work on their awareness, or they need to work on taking ownership, or they need to work on being accountable, but they're willing to do those things and to meet you halfway, like that's called being in a relationship.
And would you say that if they're not willing to do those things, that's kind of like a hard stop where there's no growth from there? Or like, what do you do in a situation where you are aware of, you know, you're working on yourself, maybe you are expressing your needs, your partner seems to either not be able to meet them or doesn't care about me. I mean, of course, that would be an issue. But if they aren't willing to, they're not willing to be accountable, especially in a longer term relationship, like, is that just kind of like, all right, the only path for this is out? Or what can you do in a scenario like that?
I mean, Liz, I'd like to hear what your thought is. But like, for me, I think if you're expressing in a respectful way what your needs are and what like you're aware of and like what you are in control of and what your role is and what you want to be accountable to, but your partner consistently points the finger at you and won't take any accountability for their role in the relationship. Okay. The beginning of that word, relations, relational, right? Relationship is the experience that occurs between two beings. Both beings have to be showing up. And if you're being pointed at as the only problem or the only person who has something to work on, that is not a relationship in the fundamental aspect of it. And so then you need to think, what kind of relationship are you in? If you're in a one direction relationship, then you're not really in one at all.
Yeah. And when it comes to the awareness, the accountability, and the ownership, if that is not being demonstrated and there's also not a demonstration of a willingness to work on it, and let's really be clear with that. Somebody telling you that they're working on it is not them working on it. That doesn't count. somebody showing you that they're working on it, that is what matters. And so if you express a concern and you see a behavior change and a consistent behavior change, then as Carly is saying, be tolerant. I can have tolerance for that all day long. I don't require perfection because Lord knows I am not perfect. But that doesn't mean that there can't be, that the effort isn't crucial and that we see that behavior change is taking place. And so if they demonstrate an ability to do that, then I say, sure, keep working on it. But I think more to your question of if they don't, to me, that is a deal breaker. That's we're at the end of the game here, like game over, you know, that's it. I tell my clients though, because a lot of people might not be ready for that. And so I tell them in those situations, you have two options. You have acceptance or change. And those two options look like you have asked for change from your partner repeatedly. They are not demonstrating a willingness, even if they keep telling you they will change. They're not demonstrating actual change. So you can either stop talking about it and just accept it, or stop talking about it and leave the relationship. But you continuing to go in circles with it and beating them over the head with this same thing is not changing anything. And your poor friends at happy hour, for the love of God, they don't want to hear about it either. So you have two choices: shut up and just accept it, or move on. But really staying stuck in the trying to get them to change and dating for their potential is always going to end up worse for you than anyone else.
Mm-hmm. And you can grow into someone, right? Like you can... I've seen this happen where like you're in a relationship and you accept where it is because you've asked them to change, right? Like there are life experiences that happen: death, birth, loss, gain, right? These big time things that change life that make somebody have like a come to universe moment where they're like, you know what? I don't want to lose you. I don't want to lose this. And so I'm willing to see things differently. But sometimes it takes an ultimatum to get there. Sometimes it takes an experience of, you know, and those are the things you have to surrender or totally out of your control. You know, it's like being mindful of that. And you can grow up with someone. You can grow into, everybody grows up. We all grow up, right? I always say when you stop growing, you die. And the alternative is far worse, to just keep growing. And so just recognize that in your consistent growth, you're going to continue growing until the day you die. And so just have an awareness and a willingness to keep growing, and to recognize that in your relationships, you're going to grow in your relationships, and you might grow into somebody who becomes more aware and who's willing to take more ownership and who's willing to be accountable. People say all the time, like, well, if he was a cheater or she was a cheater, is she always, or he or they, going to always be a cheater? Are they always going to be somebody who's toxic, right? Like, you know, with addiction, somebody could have been somebody when they were using substances that they are no longer, that, and they become someone, they're always who they maybe were in their soul, right? But they were going through something and struggling with something that was at the foundation of their addiction, right? And then they get sober and they find a different version of themselves that they're more proud to be. And that person might have more accountability and ownership and awareness, right? So like you can grow and be a better version of yourself and grow into someone who can be a better person, but then that also comes with the accountability, right? You have to have a desire to be that person.
Yeah, 100%. I love talking to both of you. I think this is, I'm just really excited for this episode. I think you've dropped so many gems.
While we're breaking up with all things toxic, let's make sure that includes our period products. When it comes to period products, a lot of us don't realize that many tampons and pads actually contain a lot of harmful chemicals. Some of these ingredients may contain carcinogens, reproductive toxicants, pesticide residues, endocrine disruptors, and allergens. Vaginal and vulvar tissues are highly absorbent, and if you've noticed irritation from your menstrual products, that might be why. I started using period underwear and organic cotton pads years ago, and I've honestly experienced such a difference. I was turned on in 2020 or so to one of my now favorite brands that's especially amazing for those of us with heavy flows. It's called Revel Cares. Revel Cares undies have been third-party tested and found to have zero traces of PFAs, aka forever chemicals. I personally love the many styles Revel Cares carries, and enjoy the peace of mind of wearing something toxin-free, super comfy, and that won't result in stained sheets the mornings of my period. To get your hands on your new favorite pair, head to getcares.com and use the code AFM15 for 15% off your order. I hope you enjoy them as much as I do. And now, back to our show.
So my second to last question, penultimate question, is, so you mentioned earlier, like those universal red flags, or, you know, especially the things where it comes to accountability and, you know, taking ownership for your actions and for, you know, your responses to things. How can you identify that for people who are dating early on? Like, are there, you know, can you just like throw out maybe a little, or what do you recommend to people? Like, early on, maybe you've been on a few dates and you haven't necessarily had conflict yet, or these things wouldn't be necessarily obvious. Are there ways to maybe challenge it so that you can see how the person will respond? Like, or is that just something that you have to wait out and see how it comes up over time? Like, are there ways to early on predict, you know, these issues?
I think there's absolutely ways to early on predict if you even want to get far enough in a relationship to see those issues. And some of those things we easily dismiss, but they are actually taking place really actively. And so how consistent somebody is with their communication, how somebody engages during communication, are they also asking questions? If you're texting, are they providing more than a one-word response? Are they asking follow-up questions? Are you always the one that is pursuing and reaching out first? You know, there are multiple things that aren't going to be exactly as the things we've been talking about, but they are pretty good indicators of how this person is going to be in relationship and how they are going to show up. And if they are more self-involved, self-motivated, self-focused, or if they have the ability to show up for you down the road when it does get more serious. And so I think that's where a lot of people, I was just talking with a client today and we talked about someone she started seeing, and he's wonderful in so many ways. He's also really inconsistent. And so while it's so easy to look past that because of all these great things, we talked about how that inconsistency is not a fluke and will likely continue to grow. And where else is it going to show up as your relationship does grow and become more serious? And so I think that that's a great place for people who are dating to stop and assess, are they getting out of even that texting exchange what they're putting into it? Those really simple things are a good place to start.
Yeah. And also like calling someone out, not being afraid to, you know how many people I work with on a weekly basis where they're like, yeah, for example, like that, Liz, like, yeah, he's just inconsistent. It's like, okay, so call him on it. Well, no, I can't do that. What if I do? What do you mean? If I do that, he's not going to like me. He doesn't like you anyway. If you call him out on it, I'm so blunt. But it's like, if you call him out on it, they're like, I would never, oh my God, he would just stop talking to me. I'm like, yeah, because you called him on his bullshit that he doesn't want to be accountable to. And it goes both ways. It's no matter how you identify, whether you're, you know, however you identify, any human being can behave these ways, right? Like it gets generalized that men do this stuff all the time. Anybody does this stuff all the time. People do this stuff all the time, right? We don't talk about that. I think that's a really important thing to be mindful of. And also, like Liz, you mentioned earlier, the nervous system. Butterflies are your intuition telling you something. And sometimes you can have like an initial butterfly of like, oh, this feels really good. And I like the way this feels. And they make me feel, I say he because I'm attracted to men, but not as a generalized piece, but like for me, because I speak for myself. But it's like, you know, if you're attracted to somebody and they make you feel all nervous inside, but nervous in a good way, where you're like, ah, yeah, the feeling is pretty mutual. I feel like the feeling is mutual, right? Like my senses are feeling this person's as into me as I'm into them. That to me is like a great green flag to keep moving with, right? Like I said to a client, don't look at people thinking about like, what do they have? What do they do for a living? How much money do they have? What do they do? Where are they from? Right? What are their flags? Yada. How do they make you feel? How does someone make you feel? Do you feel nervous? Why are you nervous around them? right? Like our nervous system actually is so indicative of that. And it'll tell us so much more than anything anybody will ever say. And following your intuition, your gut.
Yes. And great point, because if it is creating a sense of discomfort in your body, where is that coming from? Another thing to even that I encourage people to look at early on these initial dates is how they treat people out in public. And so you, maybe you're not going to see how they treat you early on because they're trying to show up as their best selves, but it's really hard for them to hide how they treat your server at the restaurant or how they treat the Uber driver or, you know, the homeless man you walk by on the street. The way that they're interacting with other people should also really be observed and taken into consideration, because you can generally pick up on the type of person somebody is through those interactions as well.
100%. And if they're not willing to see you in public and they have an explanation or a reason for that, I'm sorry. There is no reason you are not going with me, or you only want to go someplace, but I can never come to your house. Sorry. Or you go to their house and it looks like an Airbnb with no photos on the wall. Sorry. Like, don't make excuses.
Oh man, I gotta get some photos.
Don't make excuses. Don't. You need some photos on the wall. Shit. But it's like, you know, you don't, I'm joking. Everyone's going to be listening to this being like, this crazy therapist told me that she thinks I'm problematic and one big walking by the bed, so I have a photo up in my house. No, it's not what I'm saying. It's more
photo of me.
Yeah, picture of me. I just need photos of me all over the place. I'm a narcissist. I'm kidding. But it's like, you know, it's just being mindful of like, what are you, you know, the saying, like, are you picking up what I'm putting down? It's like, are you picking up what they are putting down? And what are you doing with it? If you are choosing to pick up a spiny, biting creature, because it, and it looks unsafe, if it looks like a duck and it quacks like a duck and it walls like a duck, guess what? It's not Prince Charming. It's a fucking duck. And if you don't want to be in a relationship with a duck, put the duck down and go back to the apps, or go back to a bar, or go back out with your friends. But don't make excuses looking for something to become something it isn't. It's not going to be. And your intuition is so empowering and so powerful. Like, you can tell that yourself. You don't need someone to validate that for you. You have that tool in your brain listening to this, whoever you are. You have that tool. Don't forget that it's innately in you.
Yeah, and I think it's so important what you both were saying, especially in regards to being able to like identify and being willing to identify those things early on, because I think a lot of us, when we look in retrospect, can say like, yeah, I guess that did come up kind of early on, but I ignored it, or I thought it was a one-off, but it wasn't because it happened several times. But like, for some reason, yeah, you've justified all these other things or these other characteristics, which everybody is obviously flawed. Everyone's going to have traits that you don't love, and that doesn't necessarily mean it's not the right relationship. But like, I do think a lot of us will willfully ignore certain things that we know are going to be an issue, because we do want love and we do want to have a relationship, and maybe they do have other great qualities. And I also think what was really important is like calling it out and saying like, you know, hey, I didn't like this, or hey, this is how I felt, and seeing how they respond, I would imagine, gives them that opportunity to show you if they can, you know, say, oh, wow, like I didn't realize, or oh, you know, like I'm sorry. And basically just being able to see how do they handle it when I bring up my needs or my feelings or my boundaries, and can they, you know, hold space for that and actually affirm me and validate it without, you know, of course, doing that in a way that's enabling. But okay, so last question, which is about the tolerance piece that you both spoke to. So with dating and even in the context of a relationship, like, and even maybe with an ex, right? In all these scenarios, like, how do you identify when you should give someone a second chance, or like give them the opportunity to grow? And when do you say like, either I don't have the tolerance for it, or I can't wait this out, or I don't know if they're going to grow. Like, how do you know? Like, when do you give them a second chance? When do you make room for it? And when do you say, you know what, like, I can't do this, or I shouldn't do this?
I think that it's going to be unique for each individual. So the way that I would guide a client, or the way that I would do it in my own dating life, is that back to what I was saying about effort, if the effort is being demonstrated and I'm seeing that there is, we're heading towards consistency with the requested behavior change, then I'm all for giving chances and all for sitting through that discomfort and watching the growth take place. If there is just no behavior change, or there's no even interest in the behavior change, or if excuses are being made in lieu of validating and taking time to ask clarifying questions in order to make those changes, that's a deal breaker, because that just means that's this one particular situation, but it's going to be all situations. And so that's how I would look for the effort. I would look for what changes are taking place, and I would look for consistency within those changes. And if that stuff is there, like Carly was saying earlier, we're human. You can grow with somebody. You can sit in that lack of perfection, but there has to be an interest in, I care about you enough that I want to do better.
I also think, I was going to say before, like, there's this piece that we become very tolerant when the physical intimacy has to match the emotional and intellectual intimacy. So just because the sex is unbelievable, or the kissing and the physical touch and the way you chemistry, like your chemistry and the way you physically feel with each other is so vulnerable, that does not excuse the lack of emotional and intellectual vulnerability. They have to be in tandem with the other for you to have a healthy relationship. That does not mean that with someone that you have a healthy emotional and intellectual relationship, but at some point your sex may dwindle. Right. And that's what I specialize in. Right. Like, what do you do when the sex dwindles, when the desire starts to wane and things shift and change? Right. That's situational, and that happens all the time. But and people, that's another follow-up question, is like, is that a red flag? I don't want to go like totally down another rabbit hole. It's episode number two. But like, I know, I think the biggest thing for you to be mindful of from the get-go is, does your emotional intellect, your emotional and intellectual vulnerability match the physical vulnerability and intimacy? And how are all these pieces, if you can imagine as you're listening to this, we're talking about these pieces as like fluid things, and are they all flowing together? Is it all building together? Is it growing together, right? If answer is yes, and sometimes things make you uncomfortable and maybe you don't like something about the person, but to your point, Liz, like you share similar morals and values. You speak to people the same way. You're respectful in the same way. You're willing to hear each other, willing to take criticism while you're also willing to receive it. Give it as well as you are receive it. Like, then you can kind of be tolerant, because everyone, like we said, everyone has red flags, right? We all have our own shit, but it's like, what do we do with it? How do we wear it? How do we hold it? How do we give space to it? And making sure that just because the sex is really good, don't be tolerant of some bad shit.
You know what? I think that's really important just to sit with for a second, because that is a topic that is not discussed nearly enough, that toxic relationships, there is a high frequency of them being directly correlated with mind-blowing sex. And that is just the reality of it. And so people do stay that much more addicted. They stay that much more attached to that individual. And to your, you know, the really the genesis of your question of how do we know when to keep giving it time or when to call it? If when you stop and assess, and that is what you keep going back to, yeah, but the sex is so good, so that must mean we're connected. That's not how that works. The sex is so good because sex works on dopamine, the same thing that's keeping you addicted to that toxic partner. And so I'm so glad you brought that up, Carly, because that, I mean, I talk with people about that all the time. Great sex is not a reason to stay. If anything, it might be a clue to, if that's the only reason you're staying, even more of a clue to check in to what's going on there.
Yeah. And like the final thing to that is like your sexual health. Nobody talks about that, right? Like if you're sleeping with someone who the sex is unbelievably mind-blowing, right? But they're also sleeping with many other people. And you're choosing to go blind to that, but you know that they're not using protection with you. So chances are they're probably not using protection with other people too. You're sleeping with every single person that person has slept with and is currently sleeping with. And that's not to scare the living daylights out of you listening to this, but it is to be mindful of like, you've got one body and one choice and one chance and one life, and you've got one thing to take care of, and that's you. You got to take care of you. No one else is responsible in the world for taking care of you but you. And so be mindful about where you put your body and what you put in it.
Yes, and a call to action to get tested and talk to your partners about their sexual health.
Don't be afraid. It doesn't have to be from a place of shame. And if you're listening to this and you've ever been diagnosed with something, right, or like told you're positive for something that perhaps can't be treated or be gotten rid of, right, and like it's something you're working through and holding on to, like that doesn't have to be a red flag. That doesn't mean someone is quote unquote dirty, or that they're like, or that they've been a slut, or that they're a whore, or all these other things that people get called. Like, some sexual health is just merely sexual health. And sometimes we get things that stick with us, and that doesn't make us any less lovable or trustworthy or relatable or reliable or, you know, relational. It's just something to be relational about and with, and learn how to work through that. So it's, I know we're pivoting here at the end of this podcast, but it's really about recognizing that as a human being, you're a multifactorial human. Right? There's so many different facets, so many different factors that play a role. And it really has to be that like your safety comes first and the rest of the things kind of fall afterwards.
Yeah. I think that's a great note to end on, is that it's safety in all regards, right? Physical safety, emotional safety, and sexual safety, that you feel comfortable and that you can communicate your boundaries, your needs, your desires in all of those regards with someone who's going to, you know, be responsive to that. And I feel like, yes, you've teed it up perfectly for 100% having a future episode about sex and toxic relationships, because I'm like, oh my goodness, it's such an interesting topic. But alas, unfortunately, we can't go into it. But thank you both so much for chatting with me and for this episode and for sharing so much wisdom and actionable steps people can take. I think it's really important and powerful. So thank you both for the work that you do and for joining me. Can you let people know where they can find you, how, or if they can work with you?
Yeah, for sure. So my website is Evolve Counseling, evolvecounselingaz.com. And then I'm also on Instagram at Dr. Elizabeth Fedrick. So Dr. Elizabeth Fedrick.
Hi, so I'm Carly Blau. You can look up carlyblau.com. So it's Carly with an I. And C-A-R-L-I, B as in boy, L-A-U.com. Or you can look up boutiquepsychotherapy.com. But I think I'm Instagram, it's just boutique psychotherapy. And on Instagram, I am sexdoccarly with an I. So find me. I hired 3 incredible clinicians in New York. I'm not taking new clients at this time. I'm fully booked, but the clinicians that work under my supervision are, and they are incredible. So definitely something to keep in mind. And thank you for this opportunity. What a cool, wisdom-filled evening. Liz, it was such a pleasure getting to know you, and you've inspired me in so many ways. And you know, you're great. You're always amazing.
Thank you both so much.
Thank you for tuning into this episode. We definitely need a follow-up on how mind-blowing sex can have you questioning literally everything we talked about on this episode. If you enjoyed this conversation, please leave us a review and tell me what you're asking for in your life this week. If you want your question featured on a future episode, feel free to send me a DM or head to our new beautiful website, askingformyself.com, to ask a question. How amazing is it that I got that domain, by the way? I'm super thrilled about this website because it's literally taken me months to build. Follow us on Instagram to continue the conversation and, of course, to watch me make a fool of myself on Reels. Until next time, stay curious, stay bold, and start asking for yourself. Catch you soon.